Welcome back to the Radio Cafe. I am so glad to welcome back to the show Peter Simonson, president of the ACLU New Mexico. Here at the cafe, we have Rose Griego and Kim Kyle, whose case, Griego v. Oliver, was heard by the state Supreme Court yesterday. So welcome back to the Radio Cafe. I understand we don't have Peter on immediately, but I would like to talk to you two who have really inspired this whole movement in New Mexico.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Rose, can you tell us, we had you on some time ago speaking as New Mexico was kind of entering, there seemed to be this cascade of cases with different county clerks basically allowing people marriage licenses or not, depending on their desires. And all of a sudden, all of the county clerks got together, petitioned the state Supreme Court, and said, we need an answer. So you've really been thrust in the forefront. But in the meantime, can you tell us what happened since you were last on the Radio Cafe?
Well, we got married.
That's what I was hoping for. It was a leading question here.
The momentum was, it all happened so fast. I mean, our lawsuit was filed back in April, and then by August, the hearing that we had with Judge Malott, we did not expect a bench ruling. So when that came down, we were allowed to get married. So the very next day, on August 27th, we came to the county clerk here in Santa Fe and got married, got our license and everything. So we're all official.
And I understand that since these licenses have been issued, about 900 couples have gotten licenses.
I think it's more than that. I think it's almost 1,500.
1,500
across
at this
the
point.
State, yeah.
Well, we also have Peter on the radio now. So can you all tell us what happened yesterday? This was quite historic that the state's highest court would hear this case. Can you, Peter, we have you there. Can you explain what happened in court yesterday?
Well, so there were several parties who argued before the court yesterday. And this was an unusual case because traditionally you have a situation where you have plaintiffs and defendants with opposing views, giving opposing arguments, and you have what's called a case in controversy, where there is a genuine conflict between two opposing points of view. In this instance, what we had was the ACLU, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and all of the plaintiff couples, including Kim and Rose, making an argument in favor of, or that is to say, opposing the denial of marriage licenses to same-sex couples on constitutional grounds. And then you also had the Attorney General's office weighing in on our side, saying that now, in addition to the constitutional arguments, they felt there were some statutory arguments that need to be addressed. That is to say, that the way that our state law interprets marriage makes specific reference to gender, and therefore it could create restrictions on the way county clerks are allowed to issue licenses. And on the sort of on the opposing side, but in reality, the county clerks weighed in sort of in the middle, made arguments, just gave some general interpretations about the limitations they saw under state law, some reference to constitutional arguments, and really the only opposition came from an out-of-state group called the Alliance for Defending Freedom, who was representing some Republican legislators, and in that instance, they made the argument essentially that marriage is a traditional institution, and that the legislature had intended when it originally wrote our marriage statute, that it intended it to apply only to opposite-sex couples, and that to allow same-sex couples to enjoy the freedom to marry would undermine the procreative purpose of marriage. I shouldn't speak for them, but that was my take of their argument, basically.
Well, that was my take as well, and not only that, but that the statutes were made specifically to promote procreation, or that's what it sounded like per his arguments. I don't know, mm-hmm. Rose or Kim, if you all interpreted it the same way, and that somehow by you two getting married, you would undermine a heterosexual couple's ability to procreate?
That was my take on what they were saying as well, but I'm not really sure how that works.
And so in court yesterday, there were some really interesting and very pointed questions from the justices on the bench. I thought they did a very good job questioning both sides. And at one point, I think it was Justice Charlie Daniels, who said, isn't this really a social issue about religion? Can you all discuss that a little bit?
Sure. Well, from my perspective, I was surprised that that came up. I thought he made there was sort of an interesting repartee between him and James Campbell, the attorney for the Alliance Defense Fund, in which the Alliance Defense Fund sort of came back and said, you know, that can't be true because there are multiple religions that have multiple views on this very issue. Some of them agree with allowing same-sex couples to have marriage licenses, others that oppose it. So that presumably means that religion can't be behind this. And Justice Daniels came back and said, no, on the contrary, that actually supports my argument because it suggests that we are just favoring one of those religious perspectives, the one that denies marriage to same-sex couples. That was an interesting give and take, I think, between the Justice Daniels and Mr. Campbell. But at the end of the day, that's really not at the core of the arguments that were put forth yesterday. The constitutional arguments didn't really touch on religious freedom or religious liberty. They were really more about equal protection and equal rights. That is, whether or not county clerks were discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation or on the basis of gender or sex when they deny marriage licenses to same-sex couples.
Now, can you explain why New Mexico law is fairly unique? Because it is different from a lot of other places in that it does not expressly allow or deny same-sex couples.
Well, I don't know exactly how unique New Mexico law is compared to other states, to tell you the truth. The statute that sets forth the institution of marriage itself as gender neutral, the form, the actual license form that is replicated in that is given in the state statute, does in fact make reference to male and female. And other places in our state statutes where marriage appears just beyond the definition of marriage and where the institution is created, there is also reference to male and female. It's also gendered. And so the argument is gone that presents a constraint on county clerks from giving licenses to same-sex couples.
Now, when I spoke with Senator Scherer, who is one of the Republicans involved in the case and has been a very vocal advocate against same-sex marriage, he noted that the laws were written, because they weren't as precise, they noted two people instead of a man and a woman in at least one area. He said that the law was drafted about 100 years ago to prohibit polygamy. Is this true? Is this noted somewhere?
I mean, I have no idea whether or not that's true. I think the bottom line is an argument that was debated by the justices during yesterday's oral arguments, and that was, fair enough, when the original legislators legislated the definition of marriage and created that in our state laws, and they put male and female in there, they gendered the statute. At the time, the custom and the tradition was not to. The same-sex couples didn't have this kind of profile, weren't recognized in the way they are today. So presumably, the legislators at that time weren't even thinking of the possibility that same-sex couples would seek to get married. So it's not that the statute at that time, again, 100 or so years ago, was created with a specific intent of denying that right to same-sex couples. It's that it just wasn't part of the discussion. And subsequently, and today, obviously, it's quite central to the discussion. And, we can't assume that the original conditions under which the statute was drafted hold true for today.
Now, Peter, I want to ask a little bit more about the law, but I know that Rose and Kim actually have to leave a little earlier, so I want to ask you all about your experience in the courtroom yesterday and how you felt, what was the energy in there? I could not get in. There were 150 people packed into the courtroom, and the doors were closed. Tell us a bit about that.
It was very exciting to be in the courtroom. We actually got to be in the courtroom with the justices, so it was an interesting process and fascinating, to say the least, to be in there and hear the arguments and on both sides. and listen to both Maureen Sanders and Mr. Campbell give their arguments.
And Maureen Sanders was representing the ACLU. Jim Campbell is representing this Americans Defending Freedom and the 12 Republicans.
Right.
And there were a few others then, as Peter mentioned, somebody representing the Attorney General's office.
Right. Okay.
And yet another attorney representing all of the county clerks in New Mexico.
Right. It was an interesting group, yeah. And it was, you know, because of the previous hearing that we had with Judge Malott, you know, there were no arguments, there was nothing. We basically just got to hear his bench ruling. And so this time around, hearing all the arguments was fascinating to hear the different perspectives. And, we had no idea how it was going to come out, what they were going to say. So it was the first time for us. So we got a good lesson in how the judicial system works. So that's great.
We have the guest coming in beautiful garb here. So tell us at the end what it felt like as well coming out of there. There were tons of couples out there. So and the case is Griega versus Oliver. So did you feel really that you had somehow, it was a watershed, or did you leave feeling that perhaps the court would be ruling one way or the other?
Well, I think we feel pretty hopeful because, just the tide of history coming forward. And I think New Mexico is just on the verge of making the right decision, not only because of what's happening culturally and, you know, what's happened to the Supreme Court over the summer, but just the general, you know, they cited a poll that had come out and recently about people's views about gay marriage. And, it's the most positive poll we've had in years, you know, and we've been fighting this for, you know, over 10 years in New Mexico. So, that's a very hopeful sign for all of us, I think. And that makes us feel good knowing that we're a part of that, and part of our outreach and, communication with our friends and families is making that difference in New Mexico.
And Peter, quickly, a lot of opponents have said that this issue should be put to voters, including Governor Susana Martinez. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the bottom line there is that to the right to marry someone, the right to marry the person who you love, who you choose, is a fundamental right. And in other contexts, we don't put our fundamental rights up for a vote. It's not the tradition in this country, a constitutional democratic tradition, that we subject, we put the rights of a minority group up for a vote to the majority group to see if they'll be approved. No, those rights are irrevocable. They are inalienable. They are granted by our Constitution, and they can't be taken away. So this isn't the kind of question that should go before the voters. But if, in fact, it does go before the voters, I think the tide, just as I couldn't tell
Rose.
If it was Rose or Kim. Rose, who was talking, Rose made the exact point. The tide of history is on our side, and New Mexicans are increasingly quickly growing to accept the notion that we will have same-sex marriage as part of our tradition here in New Mexico, and welcome, seem to embrace that possibility. So if it were to go to voters, we're confident that we would get a favorable outcome. But at the end of the day, again, we don't think this is an issue that should go before voters. Fundamental rights should be put up for a popular vote.
And now, there was no ruling from the bench yesterday. Are there any ideas on when the ruling may come down?
Boy, it's, very hard to predict. I think we're certainly hopeful that we would get a decision before the end of the year. And it could be in the next 3 weeks, could be in the next six to 10 weeks. I think we're all sort of waiting with bated breath to see what the outcome is.
Well, I guess one last question for all three of you. You know, on Monday, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie dropped an appeal on the same-sex marriage case, which in effect made New Jersey the 14th state to legalize same-sex marriage. So do you all feel that New Mexico will be the 15th?
Well, we certainly hope it'll be the 15th, but, you know, Hawaii might beat us to that. So it depends on when the Supreme Court here in New Mexico makes their ruling, and so we'll have to just wait and see. We could be the 16th or even the 17th, depending on what happens in Illinois as well.
But you feel pretty positive either way that they will rule in your favor.
I think we had a good day yesterday, and I think that things are moving in our direction.
Well, thank you all so much. Peter Simonson, president of the ACLU, Rose Griego, and Kim Kyle, whose case, Griego v. Oliver, was heard in front of the state Supreme Court yesterday. Thank you three so much for being with us and giving us an update. Thank you.
We're going to take
a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Emigdio Ballin, executive director of Four Bridges Traveling Permaculture, speaking about a conference beginning tomorrow on traditional agriculture and sustainable living. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back to the Radio Cafe. I am speaking today with Emigdio Ballin, executive director of the Four Bridges Traveling Permaculture Institute, and it's having its annual conference, eighth annual, I believe, on the traditional agriculture and sustainable living beginning tomorrow. Also with us is Roberto Sanero Gutierrez from Bolivia. He's one of the founders of Los Masis, Centro Cultural Masis, promotes Andean culture through workshops and traditional folklore, music, and art. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Emigdio and Roberto. It's so good to have you with us, and I am actually going to begin with Roberto and ask you how you came to come to this conference and what your work is in Bolivia.
Well, actually, I have had an invitation, and I think it's because in Bolivia is maybe the unique experience that we are doing to rescue our culture, to preserve it and promote it through our work, through our musical groups, and that makes us in a very special position, not only as a musical group, but as an institution, like it's the Cultural Center Masis. One month ago, we've been in a big gathering in Washington, D.C., the Smithsonian Center Festival, Folk Festival, Folk Life. And there we have also put up in consideration of the people what is our work to preserve culture. You know, culture is a big meaning, and that's why our work is also global. It's integrated not only with music. Music is the base of it, because the Andean people, Andean inhabitants, they are mostly very spiritual. So music has to do a lot in order to preserve the traditions, the way of being, and also we use it to educate new attitudes towards our culture.
And unfortunately, the listeners can't see you. You walked in this extraordinarily beautiful vision in traditional clothing with a Bolivian hat with feathers coming out. It took my breath away. It's very beautiful. And this is part of what you're representing.
Yes.
In terms of traditional dress and traditional culture. Emigdio, can you please tell us about the conference that is going to be beginning tomorrow at the campus of the Northern New Mexico College, correct? Española.
That's correct. It's, usually for, we try to make in this conference every year. It's a lot of work. It's very, very difficult sometimes because demand situation, all these kind of the things.
Absolutely.
But however, these kind of the things, we have a support from the tribal people, from the Tezuc Indian Pueblo, also some foundations like Lanham Foundation, Christiansen Foundation, and McCune Foundation. Okay, it's you know, this year we have I would say we're very, very fortunate because we have Vandana Shiva, it's Clayton Thomas, Dr. Greg Cajete, he's director of the American Indian Studies in UNM, also the presence of this gentleman from Bolivia, Roberto Saunero. He has a lot of experience and expertise in preserving the art, not only art in the music, we can say, also dance, weaving, pottery, plus they making a lot of recuperation of the land and soil in the community where he's working with the kids or children from 7 to 15, 18 years old, teaching all these type of the traditions, music, dance, weaving, pottery, all these kind of the things.
You mentioned Vandana Shiva. She is becoming very well known, director of the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Natural Resource Policy. but she's spoken so much about seeds and biopiracy, one of her books, The Plunder of Nature and Knowledge, and she's really headed a lot in the anti-globalization movement. So she will talk about seeds specifically, correct?
That's correct.
I think she was present last year as well, but not in person, in a video conference. But she will actually be here in person. And for anyone who is interested in the topic, it should be an extraordinary presentation up in Española. You also have the members of the International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers?
That's correct. But the grandmothers, that's not, I would say, that's not the first time. These grandmothers or the abuelas, they come into the Tezuque Pueblo and making the blessing to the all the agriculture work what we're doing there. Because the mentality and the direction we're going, it is to making sustainable and independent Indian community. No long time ago we finished the building the seed bank, all with recycled materials. Okay. We using tire bales, straw bales and adobe. I'm making with the hands of the tribal people.
And where is the seed bank?
This is in Tezuque Indian Reservation. It's 10-15 miles from here, from Santa Fe. Okay. It's, you know, it's, we are, I will say to you, we are in the position to follow this type of the aspects, because if you don't have seeds, you don't have food. Because that's in companion with the Mother Earth or the Pachamama, what we call in Quechua in Bolivia. It's very important, this type of the way we're going and preserving the food and the Mother Earth for the future generations.
And you know, right now the issue of GMOs and our food manipulation is so important, and Monsanto feels impenetrable. And do you, through the conference, do you feel that there are resources people can take back with them to help fight this and to help preserve their own cultures?
But actually, I will say to you, you know, when we go in or making this type of the events, we're making to the people thinking what's the future. Not for us. We have to think in the seven generations. Okay. And that's so important, because when we go to the Indian traditions, our ancestors, they care about us, but now in these times we don't care about anything. We care about the money. Money is the God for making every single thing in the way we have to live. Okay, we polluting completely. I would say the environment. We cannot drinking water. You cannot breathe very clean air. Any of these type of the things, you know.
And this conference begins tomorrow morning. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And people can show up and get tickets at the door.
Absolutely.
And it also goes on for how many days? Also Saturday, is it Sunday as well?
Sunday we're going to have one small event of the, you know, it's going to be some type of the blessing and some, I would say to you, some offering to the Mother Earth, in the meantime to the Mother Nature.
This is the Traditional Agriculture and Sustainable Living Conference, which is beginning tomorrow at the Northern New Mexico College up in Española. I've been speaking with Emigdio Balan and Roberto Sanero Gutierrez from Bolivia. Thank you both so much for coming and speaking to us. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Zaylee, sitting in for Mary Charlotte.